Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome Fred Schenkelberg back to the show to have a great discussion on designing for maintainability. Welcome, Fred.
Hey, James. Thanks for the invite.
I appreciate you taking the time to discuss maintainability with us today. You know, maintainability is a key part to improving our overall availability. While it doesn't directly impact reliability, it really allows us to drive availability, which in a manufacturing setting is a key component of OEE, which most people are after. So I think if we're able to provide our listeners with some great takeaways on maintainability, they can make a sustained, measurable improvement in OEE very quickly.
Oh. So, well, good summary. Did you have that written down?
Nope.
Nicely done.
So, Fred, what is maintainability to you?
Well, that word conjures up, it's like cinnamon. It will bring up memories of, you know, mom making apple pie or something like that. When you say maintainability, I get the image of when I'm laying on my back underneath my, I had a late model Oldsmobile when I was in high school, and I was trying to change the oil. And the oil filter was just a few millimeters from some other big, large chunk of metal under there. And so my knuckles are bleeding and doing all kinds of stuff. You know, and I'm thinking, the guy that designed this never had to change his oil. You know, so that's what my immediate thought when I think of design for maintainability. And I realize an automobile, many pieces of equipment have many, many different competing priorities on how to use the space and how to provide the function it's supposed to provide. And by the way, has to be maintainable. But it sure pays dividends over the long haul if you have the right tools, if you have the right access, if you have the ability to maintain a piece of equipment. And so that's what I think of it is, well, it's one of those illities, right? So it's kind of a vague definition, but it's essentially that if something breaks, I am able to fix it and to bring it back to as good as new condition. And that occurs by design. That's not after the fact. Even though there's great skilled technicians out there, and my house is getting a handful of renovations done to it, and these guys, they look at a wall and go, oh, we'll just take that out and we'll do this and that and the other thing. Now, I don't know. I could put the wood back in place, but getting the drywall back up and the texturing and all the details that go into rerouting, wiring and all that stuff, they just know what they're doing. And there are wonderful folks out there that can take a piece of equipment apart and they can fabricate parts, they can modify it, they can do all kinds of great stuff. To me, that's rebuilding equipment. That's not maintaining equipment. So maintainability is by design, the equipment is able to be restored efficiently after failure.
So making it easy to repair, to bring to that running condition back up at our rated line speed or whatever the case is.
Exactly. Instead of having to throw away a bottling piece of a bottler, multi-million dollar piece of equipment when it fails, is that your team can bring it back into service fairly quickly. And that occurs because there's the right equipment, access, tools, and knowledge to do it.
And I think you just brought up a couple great points on that maintainability piece. It's having the right tools. It's having room to work on stuff. You mentioned working on that Jeep. There's been instances where, you know, I've had to crawl in a conveyor on my back, scoop myself down, reach around and try and access a junction box without being able to see it behind a weldment.
That's right.
That's not maintainability. You can't work on that, right?
No, not at all. But it goes further than that, though, James. I was working with a design team that was trying to make a high-speed printer, an industrial-grade printer. And the team had previously only built basically office inkjet printers, which were very reliable. And the only real maintenance on it was putting more ink in it. So they brought that mindset to making this industrial piece of equipment. And they were really worried about that when they had what they called a paper crash. So when a piece of paper would fold or would deform just the wrong way, at best, it would just cause a jam. But at worst, it would wipe out the print heads. It would actually damage the most expensive piece of the equipment. And then it would be a very expensive repair besides just clearing a jam. And they were trying to make it work in a very high reliable fashion, so just not have failures. Well, paper's notoriously bad about being consistent. The feedstock they were using and the variability that it would have is almost guaranteed that they would have these crashes. And they were trying to just force the paper to behave, and that was just not going to happen. So instead, they had to figure out a way to, if it was a bad piece of paper, to have it show itself and be a very quick and easy repair, clear a jam, without it actually impacting the most sensitive pieces of equipment in the system. Instead of forcing the paper to do its final alignment right when it gets printed, they were doing that about a foot prior and then realigning it again, but only a very minor adjustment right in the critical point. And by putting an access hatch in, by putting the ease of maintenance in, by creating the known failures to occur in a safe place and an easy to fix place, it just dramatically changed the availability of the equipment. So instead of a truck roll and a highly skilled technician to repair the equipment, it was a couple second job for the operator. But like I said right at the start, that doesn't occur by the maintenance team. It's built into the team that enables the operator or the maintenance team to effect that repair. So like junk inbox you dealt with, you know, there is no reason that needed to be hidden. You don't put a junction box someplace which screws in it that you can access, or a cover on it that's meant to be accessed completely hidden. That's ridiculous. It's also dangerous.
Exactly. So maintainability is hugely important from a number of aspects. Safety, for example, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, why are you accessing a junction box blind in a piece of equipment? That's not very safe. It improves the availability of the equipment, right? Why else is maintainability important?
Well, it's I'm thinking, you know, the speed of repair is the easiest part, but I also think maintainability goes into thinking through what's going to fail. And so it goes into just having the right spares, the right training, the right technology, tools, all of those kinds of things available. You know, a basic principle of the design for maintainability is to use the knowledge and tools of the people that are already maintaining similar equipment or already in that factory. If every piece of equipment came in with unique tools, right, we would need to build another building for all the tools and kits and equipment we needed, besides the spares, to deal with it. So using common screwdrivers, for example, or common types of equipment to effect repairs is critical. Yet, I don't know. I don't know if it's the same in Canada, James, but in the U.S., the designers here seem to enjoy creating new things. There's just not enough types of screwdrivers out there, apparently.
It's the same thing here.
Okay. Sorry about that. So, you're too close to Detroit, I guess, where you are.
Exactly. So we talked about, you know, standardizing some stuff as a way to start designing for maintainability. But how else do we do that? Can we use some of the reliability tools out there? Do we need different types of methodologies, procedures, analysis? How do we really start designing for maintainability?
Well, there's the part when something fails, we talk about access and tools and things like that. But there's also the element of, well, what is likely to fail? So I was working with the team making a piece of medical equipment, and it had hydraulics and radiation therapy equipment in it. It had electronics and all kinds of different systems built into this piece of equipment. It was a massive chunk of equipment. The only thing that was not maintainable was the frame. And it's like an aircraft, right? Boeing will make a frame, but every 5 years, maybe a little bit more now, is they basically strip it down to nothing, and then they bring in new wiring, they bring in all the new boxes and all that stuff. And so this medical device was designed from the ground up that the frame that we bolt to the floor is the only thing maintainable. Everything else can be fixed. And, you know, some are immediate access for almost daily updates and servicing, but other things had a way to repair it. And so the idea of thinking through what's going to fail every time we use it, what do we need to clean or wash or disinfect versus what are the things that are going to wear out in any form or fashion. Imagine if you built a conveyor belt and every roller was a slightly different size, right? It's not thinking about maintainability at that point.
No, and I'd hate to be the mechanic that had to deal with that.
That's right.
So from what I'm hearing is we could use a failure mode effect analysis, mm-hmm. identify the failures that we prioritize to address from reliability improvements.
Yes.
But then also look at those from a different perspective and say, if this fails, how do we fix it? What spares do we need? Those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I would add on to that is also if it's buried and you had to remove other parts to get to it, what's the effect of those removals, reinsertions on those upper level components? I've run into some equipment where the access hatches had pretty cheap hinges and locks on them, interconnects on them, so that they spent more time trying to get the door to re-engage the safety lockouts than actually doing the repair. And it was because of the construction of it. Well, the doors are there to give them access to stuff they needed to get into about once a week. But the structure was only really good for about a year. And then it started to fall apart. And so it required a retrofit for these parts and the hinges and the locks and the interconnect devices to save the time in the repair. So it includes not only do I snap in a new part and retest it and I'm up and running, it's, well, how do I get there? And is that going to impede me getting back into service?
And I think you just brought up a great point there, snapping in a part. And to me, maintainability, when you're looking at that, is exactly that. Can I just snap in a part, or do I have to unwire 60 different conductors, rewire 60 different conductors, and do all these things? Or is it on a connector? You know, hydraulics, pneumatics, are they on connectors, or do I got to disassemble piping and all those things?
Mm-hmm.
And having those quick connects or having those things set up so you can make quick connections, this makes a huge difference. Having valves in the right place, isolation valves.
That's right.
I was working with an organization, and the isolation valve for this pump was in three rooms over, up two flights of stairs. So you're trying to chase pipe, trace it through walls, seeing where it's going to try and isolate that valve. It took half hour to figure out where to lock it out.
That's
right. It's just putting isolation valves, motor disconnects near the motor, isolation valves near pumps, or those sorts of things, makes a huge difference in maintainability.
It does. And it's also with the idea towards the goal being availability is take out the whole subsystem. In the military, we used to call them field replaceable units. So we would take out whole blocks of componentry in systems and just replace it, and we'd be up and running really fast. Now, somebody else would take that apart and figure out what actually failed and do the failure analysis and sort it out, which is also part of maintainability, is I need to be able to find what to replace. So if I have a motor that has the controllers and other elements built right into that motor unit, I don't need to do a whole lot of diagnostic work to figure it out. I just have one big chunk to replace. But if it's in six different pieces and it's not sure, is it the driver? Is it the power? Is it grounding? Is it bearings? Is it, you know, what is it that's failed? And I have to spend an hour to diagnose it before I can repair the correct part. That's more downtime. Whereas if I walk up to it, I take the whole thing out, put it in a whole new unit, then go diagnose it and sort out what's going on.
The fault detection, how easy is it to troubleshoot? Does it pinpoint exactly what the issue is so you can address it right away?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Part of that, a corollary to that diagnostic part is keep in mind that the part that failed, which is the obvious thing that needs to be replaced or serviced, may not be the cause of the problem. And you might be back there the next day. So it's the diagnostic has to tell you, well, what failed? This motor failed. But it was because the electronics overdrove it and we need to replace the circuit board. So part of the diagnostic element is finding what's the source of the problem, not necessarily always what actually failed. And so you can quickly get to a root cause. And more systems are adding more and more sensors and tracking devices and prognostic health management tools in order to detect So we can do more preventative maintenance more often and avoid failures from occurring. But that same set of equipment can also help us replace the elements of the system that are causing the problem rather than just the victims of the fault.
It's identifying the root cause of the issue, not just addressing the symptom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is hard to do unless you have a lot more information. And again, it's got to be designed into the system.
Absolutely.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Now, I think we got an idea of what maintainability is. How do we design it? What do we look for when we're trying to improve it? And this might be a controversial question, knowing your stance on mean time between failure. But how do you measure maintainability? Is it mean time to repair? Is that the right way to do it?
I'm going to back up a little bit. I don't like MTBF because it's so misunderstood. Now, mean time to repair is also a rough estimate of something that is actually much more complicated than just a single number. What I found is most people understand that it's the time of repair, and this is just an average of it, and that it typically follows a log normal distribution. It's not all universal, but that connection is much more present with the teams I've worked with than on the other side, where MTBF is not real clear what it's the average of and what to do with it, or that the failure rates may actually be better described by a Weibull distribution or log normal or some other one. But mean time to repair doesn't seem to have as much misunderstanding surrounding it. As a single number, it's not terribly useful. We need to know, are we on some log normal distribution of sorts where we're going to do 1,000 repairs and most of them are only 10 seconds long? You know, the autocorrect sequence works every time, except for once in a while it's a 6-hour repair or something like that. Or are they all roughly a 10-minute repair? Some other distribution. So I think mean time to repair, while it's not as misunderstood, it's you don't have enough information to make decisions based on the data that you have by summarizing it as a single number.
Yeah, because you need to know what specific failure mode were you addressing, all those other things that factor into that. Because if you take a mean time to repair for a piece of equipment, well, you may have 10 different repairs, 20 different repairs that are included in that, and that doesn't really give you a good number.
Well, there's that element, is that you need to describe it by the nature of what the repair was. And you see lots of systems where they break down how much time was spent in diagnostics, how much was finding parts, how much time was other elements affecting their overall repair. But it's also, even like changing the oil on a car, is a lot of times it only really takes 10 minutes once you have the piece there. But there's every now and then there's one that you strip the threads. Right? Now you're going to be there a while longer. So it's accounting for that variability. And that's where I have the biggest problem with mean time to repair, is that it masks or hides the amount of variability, right? And so it manifests itself in your team when you send somebody out to do a repair, and on average in your plant, it takes 2 hours to replace this motor. Well, if he gets it done in a half an hour, that doesn't mean that he's particularly good. It might be, right? It might have just been in a much easier location, much more access. It might have been the bolts were all easy to come out, and it made it happen real fast. But then you turn around and penalize the guy that took 2.5 hours, right? Well, it's going to vary. And so using mean time to repair all the time masks that, and that's just the human side of it. But from a statistics side, is we need to understand that variability in making decisions of what we should solve. Do we make the process of the repair more consistent so that we minimize that variability so it's predictable? Or do we change the design, or we go after training or some other aspect to minimize variability? Or do we need to shift the entire process by going to a different style of system? And you can't decide that with just MTTR.
No, so you almost need a control chart of sorts to see what the variability is, see what the time is based on that specific repair that's taking place.
Yeah, I would say that's especially something you're doing very frequently. I would use that kind of a tool. But just in general is realize that by oversimplifying it, you're masking the richness of the data that you have available. And whether you use SPC or if you're just fitting a distribution to it, you don't want to lose that information. Especially like when you're calculating availability. Now in a factory, if it's running and you're producing product, you're up. And when it's not, it's down. And so the calculations become pretty straightforward. You just count uptime and downtime and tally those up. But when you start analyzing what's causing that, then MTBF and MTTR often so oversimplify it that you're just guessing of what you should be doing.
Yep. And if I remember correctly, ISO 14224 covers how to measure maintainability, and I believe it does recommend a specific distribution to use for that. I can't remember what it is right now. I'll have to look it up, and I'll link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, it's probably log normal. That's fairly common. And it's also pretty easy to calculate, too.
All right, so once we can start measuring it, what are some easy wins to improve it? Say if we're not in the design phase anymore, mm-hmm. or even if we are in the design phase, what are some easy wins to improve maintainability?
Well, you mentioned it earlier, we talked about it a little bit earlier, is snap in, snap out, snap in. So I would break it down this way, is you have to be notified that something's broken, right? You've seen equipment that's been running in horrible shape that should have been replaced years ago, and it's producing shoddy product as it's going, and you accept the yield loss rather than repair your equipment. So they just may never realize that it's out of spec or it's causing damage to the product. So notification or alerts or something like that, that lets you know that something's not right. And better would be that something's about to not be right, the prognostic health management type stuff. Two is that you don't need an entire chest of tools to affect the repair, right? If I can use it with the minimum number of tools and equipment and labor to make it happen, the better. It's just faster. If I have to keep track of six different types of, say, screwdrivers, the likelihood of having all of those is significantly less than if I just need a Phillips head screwdriver, just one,
yep.
Right? So minimize tools, minimize steps to do the process, minimize alignment and calibration and resetting the restart procedure, streamline that as much as possible.
I think access is also a huge role in maintainability. I was working with the site and there is a pump. No, it was a blower they had to access. And in order to access this blower, they had to bring in a lift to get access to it. Well, the only lifts they had on site were scissor lifts. And the only place you could position a scissor lift was on this 30 degree incline. But you can only fit it in sideways. So no one obviously in their right mind wanted to get on that scissor lift. So they had to erect scaffolding and all this other stuff to get up to this blower. If they just would have had a flat grade there, you could just roll in the scissor lift and eliminate a day's worth of setting up scaffolding, permitting, all that other nonsense.
I was working with a client a few years ago that it was a boiler that they had to do maintenance on it, but they had to bring in cranes and disassemble part of the building, and it was, they said, yeah, we only have to do it every couple of years. Oh my god. What a mess. The part of the design of that access is also, it's not just that you can see the equipment, right? Just because you can see the blower doesn't mean you have access to it. You have to be able to get around to it. You have to be able to get tools on the nuts and bolts and equipment and electronics and shutoffs and everything else. And you got to keep in mind that people are different sizes. And it makes the design more complex. There's no doubt about it. Yet, if you don't get it right, you're going to pay for it over and over again as you try to effect repairs.
Absolutely. It leads into ergonomics. You need to, you know, keep the maintenance guys in good health, and you have to have some level of ergonomic design in there for us to maintain it properly. If not, you know, guys are going to be reaching around, they're going to be crouching, they're not going to be able to reach stuff. Like you said, everyone's built different sizes. They need to be able to get in there and access that.
Yeah. And I don't know of any of the maintenance teams that can do a straight leg, bent back, you know, 40 kilo deadlift on a daily basis and survive.
It's no.
Just come on, let's think about this. How are we going to get the equipment in and out? How are we going to get the tools in and out? The trouble is that the design team is often very focused on the functionality. And they have dozens, if not hundreds, of different priorities and different constraints or mix of those things. Is they want high performance and weight's an issue and all these other aspects of it. So if they add an access port, now we're adding weight and complexity, and it maybe it affects the rigidity of the equipment and so on. Best way I know to do design for maintainability is have the maintenance representative, basically, or an engineer that's focused on maintainability, sitting right next to the designers when they're designing it, with the mechanical engineer that's creating the product. Have them teamed up right from the start. And so that every decision is considered in the context of, well, how are we going to maintain it? Whereas if it's the design team does this beautiful, elegant-looking design, and they throw it over the wall to somebody else to say, hey, you figure out how to maintain it, well, they're overly constrained at that point, oftentimes.
Yep, absolutely. So the one thing you would change, and I agree with you 100%, is having someone who knows how to maintain equipment, what they need to do to maintain equipment, involved in that design. That is the one thing organizations need to take away from this.
Yeah. It could stamp my feet, but I'm on carpet, so I don't think it would come through on the microphone.
Perfect. So what else are you up to, Fred, right now?
Well, I'm learning all about galvanized pipe and how that's not a good idea for long term, and that when people build houses, we just moved into a new home, and the valves for the washer dryer were, I don't know whether the wall got built around the valves or the valves were redone and they cut the pipe and sunk them into the wall a little bit, but you couldn't turn the valves. So they positioned the valves on and then they turned the water on for the house. The only way you could get these things to turn on and off. So they're not terribly useful. So we took the valves off. We shut off the water. We took the valves off. And the galvanized pipe is about 40 years old in the house. And there's only about half the pipe left inside. There's so much buildup. And so we're just getting half the flow. And that was just the piece we saw. It could be worse in other locations. And so we have a plumber coming in to repipe the house. They're breaking open walls. We had to dig a big piece under the crawl space so they could even have access. We spent a bunch of time already just getting access so they could actually see what needed to be done and bid the project.
So only were the valve installed in an improper way, there was no access to them and no access to a lot of the other stuff. So
that's right.
Poor maintainability in the design is right there.
That's right. And, you don't expect to have to repipe your house very often. Yet, even the functional things, like if the toilet overflowed, I couldn't turn the water off at the toilet, for example. That's just poor thinking.
Yes, absolutely.
In the way they installed these things. So anyway, we're working through all of that stuff. And luckily, they're all not in the house at the moment. So no background noise and hammers and saws and stuff like that. So most of my time in the last 6 weeks or so have been preparing to move and then moving to this new home and getting it set up the way we like. Other than that, I've just now getting back into the Ascendo reliability site and bringing in some more courses. I'm talking to an engineer that's heavily into software reliability and creating a course on that. And again, design for software reliability is the key piece to that. Also looking at a more of a basic statistics course, certification type courses, talking to about 6 or 7 other engineers in consultants about bringing courses into the site. So I'm pretty excited in the next, probably 6 months to a year, we'll have a pretty good roster of courses available on the site.
Excellent, excellent. A one-stop shop to improve your maintenance, reliability, and asset management knowledge.
Yeah, well, with your help, James, I'm looking to you to offer some of those courses too.
Definitely can do that. We're finishing up a maintenance reliability best practice course, so that'll be going up shortly.
Cool.
We can definitely set it up on Ascendo as well.
That'd be great.
After that, looking at an asset management course, prepare people for writing the Certified Asset Management Assessor certification. So,
wow, those would be excellent. Yeah, I think that'd work well with the audience there.
Yep.
Cool.
All right, Fred, I want to say thank you again for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with the listeners. And have yourself a great night.
All right. Thanks, James. Talk to you later.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.